This podcast is brought to you by Art Margins, the online journal of East and Central European contemporary art. Download more podcasts and read interviews, articles, and reviews at www.artmargins.com.
So this is an interview with Mikhail Bielitsky, being recorded on the 15th of November. And the first question I would like to ask is about your hybrid background. You are from the Czech Republic, but you lived for a long time in America. You teach in Germany at the moment at the Hochschule für Gestaltung in Karlsruhe.
That's correct.
So I'd like to ask you about how you managed to combine all these different places and what influence perhaps this has had on your work.
Okay, so I will start like this. When I was 15 years old, the Russian invaded Czechoslovakia and my parents escaped the country to Germany. And so I went to the high school there, and actually my first university after the high school was medical studies, which I, after a few years, quit, and I didn't know what to do with my life. I went to United States. I was living a little bit in California and Santa Cruz in the early 80s. And then I went to New York, and I was, in that time, already intensively photographing. I came back to Germany, and I was accepted in one of the best art schools of that time with Mr. Bernd Becher. There is this couple, Hilla and Bernd Becher, who had all those famous artists, students in that time, which were my colleagues, like Thomas Ruf, Thomas Struth, and also Andreas Gursky, which are today all mega stars in photography. So this was my first beginning in an art school, but I met Nam June Paik, the father of video art, which was also a professor there, and this was my destiny. So I started to do video. And I also started when the computers appeared to make some works by computer-generated work, basically. But then the communism went down in Czechoslovakia, and I was invited. I was pretty old when I started the school, but I was appointed as a professor and founding director of a new department at the Art Academy or Art School of Prague, the oldest art school of Prague, to build up a new media art department, which was first of its kind in Eastern Europe in general. So I went after 20 years back to Czechoslovakia for 16 years, and I built up this department. And actually, when I was still, it was a funny situation, I was still a student in Düsseldorf, and I was in the same time professor in Prague. So I was living a kind of double life, which was interesting, in two different countries. And after 16 years, which was 3 years ago, I finally left Prague, and I got this wonderful work at the Hochschule für Gestaltung, where is also the ZKM, Center for Art and Technology. This is a one building, to become a head of a department of new media art department. So I'm running now this department, and it's wonderful because it's within a whole complex of museums, research centers. It's a former munition factory. So you are living almost in a small city within the city, in southwest of Germany, Karlsruhe.
How you mentioned Nam June Paik, and one obviously wonders what kind of influence he had on your switching from photography to video. From today's point of view, how do you evaluate the role he's played in your work?
I mean, it was everything else than the... Of course, I used video in my first year, so this was already an obvious influence because this was his medium as well. But I must say that his influence was much stronger kind of in his attitude to life than in his, artistic attitude. First of all, he was indeed not much there. We saw him maybe 2-3 times a year, and he would invite us time to time to New York to stay with him in his studio and to organize some shows for us, like in Anthology Film Archives in the East Village or other places. So his influence was more... Why I felt close to him was probably his ultimate cosmopolitan perception of the world. And this was kind of close to my perception as well, so there was some kind of affinity. But it was, I would say, it was less the artistic artistic behavior, gestures, however you would call it. So I cannot say he influenced me in my work, and I'm happy about it, because I think any teaching person should try to find in the students their own sensibilities, their own qualities, and cultivate those and not put his own strategies. And this is what Pike did as well. So he wouldn't talk so much about art. He would talk about God and the world, and in an interesting way.
What about the Bechers? You mentioned Hiller and Count Becher.
Well, the Bechers were, actually he was the professor in the school, so I was more in touch with him. He was a very, unfortunately he died a few years, 2 years ago, I think. He was a very focused, he knew what he likes, he was very, he accepted just very particular kind of photography, and I was somehow lucky to get in his class or in his department. I brought some portraits of people from New York in that time, and I must say, it sounds maybe a little bit strange from my side, but those all colleagues of mine, which were those famous, very prominent photographers of the day, Struth, Ruth, and Gursky, for example, but many more. Actually, this was one of the most boring groups I ever met. And this was kind of almost depressing me. And this was kind of forcing me to say, I'm not going to stay here for 6 years and being in this. I was very, even photography was in that time my medium, I didn't see any sense. And exactly the opposite happened in Pike, where every student was from another country. So, we were, in a way, the foreigners were the majority. So we would call our German colleagues the foreigners. So I didn't get too much from Becher or from Bechers, except a very concentrated, strict, very, very focused attitude, and I still believe that their work is really exceptional and very strong. And I still believe that the student work was just in the right time, in the right place. The art market and the art system needed a new medium to come up, and they were just in the right time, in the right place. And I'm sure it's overvalued, but the art market has its own laws, the art market has its own, and actually the guy who brought them up, Mr. Klaus Honneff, a German photographic curator, he admitted this. He's the one who basically brought those Becher students up, and he, which I found a very honest statement by him, he admitted that they were just it was the right time. So sometimes it's a constellation of many conditions which make something happen.
Tell me something about your attitude towards the medium of photography.
What a question. It's funny, because I was probably, it sounds stupid when people say, I already, like painters say, my first paintings I did when I was 3 years old. But of course, first I must say two things. First of all, my father had a very old photographic camera, which I was already impressed by the design. And I had a neighbor in the neighborhood in Czech Republic, Czechoslovakia, when I was about 7-8 years old, a friend, and his brother, older brother, has a dark room. So we did, like, we were 7-8 years old, we did photographs and developed by ourselves, and we found it really like a magic that suddenly in this chemical, suddenly the image appears slowly when you develop the image. So this was kind of a first kind of experience, which I think affected me a lot. And of course, Czech Republic is a great tradition in photography, in a avant-garde photography from Czech Republic. Actually, I bought one book, just in a used $5 beautiful book by Josef Sudek. And I think it has still an impact on me, and I'm all the time taking pictures, and my wife say, you did something wrong, you should have remained with a photography, you have an eye, and you know, it is, I think it is the beside moving image, probably one of the very in the age, if you take photography as the first kind of technological image, you know, made by machine, I think this is the beginning of a really new era when you continue and then you get moving image and you get multimedia. And actually about this history I talked in my and showed some really unusual material from 50s and 60s, which was done in Czech Republic, using mixing kind of photography and moving image and multi-screen and interactive cinema. They were pretty advanced. So there is a great tradition. I think I would say I'm more affected by this Czech Prague visuality, which is something I wrote even some articles about it, and I can maybe forward you one of them. There is a great some sense of kind of you know, already in a medieval time, in the Renaissance time of Prague, and then maybe now going a little bit away from that, but in the Renaissance time, under the Emperor Rudolf II, it was a great around him. He was very much interested in art, science, astronomy, alchemy. So he surrounded people like Johannes Kepler, the astronomer, but also the Danish astronomer Tycho Brahe, but also the painter Archimboldo, or other artists, and also a very famous rabbi who actually was not only a great Kabbalah interpreter and applied, one of the first applied mathematicians, it was a man of a universal knowledge. He used the kind of those camera obscuras and Latin, magic Latin, to project on walls. And he lived in a Jewish ghetto, and when this emperor appreciated him a lot for his wisdom, and once this emperor visited him in his simple house in a ghetto, and he changed that night, they say he made a wonder, he changed his simple house, which had the white walls, into a castle. And what he did, he projected painted images from the interiors of the castle on the walls. So he created a kind of medieval virtual reality. So there is some great tradition, and I grew up with this culture. I grew up also with very fascinating movies and 360 degrees projections. So I think this had in a way more impact on me than Nam June Paik or Beckers.
In this context, how formative was growing up in the Czech Republic behind the Iron Curtain on your career, you know, as an artist? And how do you evaluate that period from the point of view of now?
I was very lucky, because you must know I was 15 when I left the country, so you get aware of your situation, of a political, social, and so on situation, not before you are 10 years old. So, and you must know, when I was 10 years old, this was 1964, and it was after the Stalin crime was already decoded, and there was Khrushchev era, and you know, the whole society was getting in a kind of liberation trip. There was a new age in the 60s, which was so sometimes more in many ways freer than any Western system. So there was a lots of experimental cinema. There was a kind of freedom of expression, in a, even if it was communist till 60, it was culminating till 68. But already in the middle of 60s, so I experienced kind of this Iron Curtain reality, very, I would say almost like a little revolution, which later came in the 60s, you know, in this whole hippie and the Paris and Berlin and San Francisco spirit, all those 68. It was already in Czechoslovakia in, let's say, mid-60s, few years before, for maybe different reasons. It was not this kind of, you know, we turn against the establishment as the Germans did, or maybe even the American kids did. But there was some kind of spirit in the air. And so I grew up with Antonioni movies and with Bergman movies. They were running in cinema. As a young kid, I even probably didn't understand all the sense in that age of the movies. I saw in concerts in Prague in 66, 66. 67 groups like, you know, Emerson, Lake and Palmer. The Emerson had a group called The Nice before. So I saw them in Prague. I saw Ella Fitzgerald. I saw, you know, so we could even, in that time already, were allowed to travel to Western countries. So those last, my last 5 years in Czechoslovakia were everything else than suppression. Opposite. And of course the shock came when the Russians came, and then it was, but it was slowly again going backwards, and then we left the country. So and then I came to Germany 69 when there was just beginning this hippie movement. So I became kind of, I grew my hair within a few weeks long, and I changed my identity from a kind of former kind of young, you know, communist, member of, not communist, but, you know, from socialistic country to a hippie. So it was also, I was very lucky because you come to Germany. So I didn't experience the emigration as a kind of tough, even if it was not easy for my parents because they were both Holocaust survivors and they lost the whole family in a concentration camp. So it was somehow tough for them to come to Germany, but because my father was a scientist and professor in Czech Republic, so he got the opportunity to become a guest professor in Germany, so it was easy way to start new life in the West.
Tell me something about your early experience of the Western art scene in West Germany. You arrived when conceptual art was becoming big, but there was also fluxes.
Exactly.
There was,
you must know, of course, I was not in my first, like, let's say I'm 15 when I come to Germany, so of course I go to the high school. I'm not so much still connected. I had some friends which already, when I was 17, 18, which were a little bit older, and studied in the art school, where was Joseph Beuys, Gerhard Richter, you know, all those. There were one, every professor was one big name. So Düsseldorf and Cologne was in the 70s, 80s, a mecca of contemporary conceptual art. There was Tony Craig. There was, you know, every person was a big name, and it was also a kind of revolutionary spirit in there. But I'm coming relatively late in this school. I'm already 30 when I entered the school, and it was 1984. And still, Joseph Beuys was alive. Nam June Paik was there. There was a kind of on one side strong, you know, collective spirit of conceptual art, very strong, and there were some already, you know, contra movements against this, which said to boys, fuck you, and there was lots of fight and lots of between the students and the professor. It was not such a conformistic attitude as our students today are, but it was also different spirit in general in the air. So of course I was also affected through this, and it was, you know, it was much, of course the contemporary art had also, I think, a very different, first of all, Düsseldorf and Cologne was one of the hotspots within the Europe. So it was not only the schools, but, you know, the schools around, you know, the whole coffee places, all the scene bars were affected by the schools. It was not just, you know, closed school. And of course also this conceptual art had very different meaning than today. And this is my first question when we get new students: what is the role of a modern contemporary artist on the beginning of 21st century? Because it's the whole contemporary art thing is loaded with so many cliches and so many stereotypes. And I believe that probably the most interesting contemporary artistic concepts, gestures, projects are happening completely outside of the system. We have a parallel world, the net, we have parallel activities, so we don't have anymore this contemporary. There is of course, there is the art market and the whole system, which is the art school, the art magazine, the gallery. There is a whole complex, but I believe that the most interesting and innovative things happens completely outside of this. And in that time, it was not the case. You were really kind of, you felt that you are kind of inside. It sounds maybe strange. I don't know if you understand what I'm trying to say.
What was your first confrontation with art from the Czech Republic or some other country of Central Europe from behind the Iron Curtain after you had emigrated to Germany?
Of course, since I grew up in a family, we had paintings on the wall. So I grew up, my brother was, interested in art. So of course I got, the first paintings I saw were probably in my childhood on our wall. And in Germany, in a high school, I was having an art, I was taking art, you could choose art classes, and we had a very interesting teacher in a high school, right? It's like gymnasium, you say, And he would take us to shows, and he would, so probably this was the first time I was like maybe 16, 17, when I was consciously confronted with Joseph Beuys. And you must know, I lived in Düsseldorf, like 500 yards or maybe 700 yards from Joseph Beuys, and I saw him every day without knowing it's him, but he was always driving an old Bentley and he had his head, and I thought, this guy looks very different from the others. And just many years later, I was told, or I found out that this is Joseph Beuys. So it was probably through the high school, through this teacher, which, but then again, I was from a family where everybody was a medical doctor, so somehow I had to go, it was my free choice. But I went for medical school. So, it was a kind of road, it was not a straight road. And I think New York experience was a key experience where I had a friend, he's a New York-based photographer, Frederick Cantor, who I think influenced me a lot he also encouraged me to go this direction. So I was pretty late, I would say. But I was always surrounded because Düsseldorf was, you had the shows, you had the big events, you had the performances by Beuys and Pike together, you would go, So it was almost like social, so you are within this happenings. So I guess it also had some impact. Even I must say, I did lots. Maybe the stronger thing what I learned from Pike was really, and this was maybe my mistake also. Some people say, I made my first, after I did videotapes, I started to make video installation and video sculptures. They became very successful, and art, magazine Art News in America was publishing two pages about new coming art. But I quit. I was always curious in an experimental and to not to become slave of my own style. So I was always, and then I was, I went more in this digital art, and I was invited many times to Ars Electronica in Linz, to ZKM. So this was my field. But I gave up. I could have made probably this classical career as an artist who produced artifacts. They get sold. I was not aware I should do it, and I was more curious to explore the medium in a very experimental, often in a radical way. And this was full of risks, and so this was probably, but I still, I'm not sorry.
You founded the new media department at the Academy of Fine Arts in Prague. Tell me about that experience working with the Czech institution, but also about the new media scene as it developed at that time in the Czech Republic.
You must know, coming 1990 to Prague was like a heaven in Europe, probably, because there was this great spirit in the air where all the, it was more exciting to be in Prague than to be in any Western city, like to be in Paris or Amsterdam, because of course, finally the people got there was a kind of explosion of any kind of activity, of course, artistic activity. So I was lucky to have this first generation of those kids which are just coming from this. So they were also full of energies. And this was only not in Czech Republic. I traveled a lot through Eastern Europe. I went to Kazakhstan, I was in Russia, I was in Bulgaria, Romania, all those countries, because I was also in kind of advising committee for George Soros. This, he had a kind of culture centers he planted in each country, and I was on, so I was moving around, and I could see in all those countries, including especially Prague. So I had wonderful students which had lots of ideas, which got also very fast kind of also international, some international recognition, and it was a absolutely right place to be. It was lots of enthusiasm. There were interesting shows. I organized also conferences in collaboration with Goethe Institute in Prague to invite top media artists from all over the world. So it was very living culture. But I must say, after 6-7 years, it went down. It's nobody's fault. It was just another constellation. And it was for several years very, very suddenly all this optimism in the through the visualized, through the activities was gone. And it's interesting that today, after 20 years, we just celebrate 20 years after the so-called Velvet Revolution, somehow the situation is very different. Of course, many state, giant national gallery, which is a complex of many museums, is in the hands of a former Fluxus, only Fluxus leader of Czech Republic, Milan Knížák. But he became such a dictator and such a destroyer of any, you know, innovation. So it's so perverted, the situation. So of course, people are so angry and pissed off, if I may say it this way, that there are even private initiatives. One guy gave 2 or 3 million of dollars to build a museum. And so there are parallel activities because people are angry that many people from communist time, which are also, you know, many people got not only the communists, but also people which were relatively, let's say, under communist okay, still they got deformed through the system. It's strange to say, but it's like this. So the whole situation in Czech Republic, and it's not only Czech Republic, in this whole, compared to this early optimistic moments and nice, it changed a lot, and it's not so, there is something wrong, and probably it will take another generation till maybe they get rid of it. And also this weird combination with this global, you know, you must imagine getting rid of communism is also parallel to this, is a strong beginning of globalization. So, you know, so they inherited, they came into a very strange, so there is this early capitalism where it's a very complex what happened to the society, and the society is still, I would say, very sick.
What are you currently working on?
I'm in those 2 years involved in a field I would call, but it's also probably wrong name, data visualization. You can see some of the work here. Where I'm with my wife, I started to work since 4 years with my wife together, where we are interested doing projects in a public space, but often kind of not legal on a legal way, but kind of subversive, guerrilla style work, that we just take some buildings in the cities. In Europe it's more easy than I guess it would be in the States. Probably you would get easily arrested probably for this. So we started with this, projecting on buildings, all kind of animations, but we went fast into a kind of web-based animation, kind of data visualization, kind of our two recent projects, and you can see it, it's called, we are taking, for example, a news feed from Google News, and we created a giant data database of animated pictograms, and each animation, short animation pictogram, has a several keywords which can be also added by the audience, by the way, and we made a kind of news translation machine in real time. So we take news and translate them into pictogrammic language, and we often project it on public spaces, sometimes in galleries, sometimes on buildings. We work a lot with language and visualize, you know, we use text, and we created a kind of animated sea of text where you can get real-time live feed of news, and you can with a ship wheel, you call it, such a, you know, you drive the ship, and you can navigate in this text. So we are interested in very much in, you know, news. What is news? What is the amount of information we are confronted with? How true is this information we get? How we deal with this, you know, exponential growth of information? So we call news producers the biggest information polluters of our age. And we are dealing with those issues and visualizing it in different forms. We are a lot operating outside art systems, as I mentioned, in public spaces. And I do the same with my students. And my main course, it's since several years called Go Public, where we try to reconquer with the students the public space, which is supposed to belong to us. And of course, in the States, it's still a much bigger problem, because here is completely the public space privatized by, you know, commercial. So we say we as artists have the right to take it and to recultivate it and to liberate it a little bit, even symbolically, metaphorically, from the commercial impact, which, because, you know, you drive Sunset Boulevard, it's just advertising, it's dominating your mind, it's brainwashing your mind, and it's like legal. And if I would take a projector and project on a building some art project, probably police comes and arrest me and will ask me, you have permission, but they never ask the, you know. So there is something wrong with the public space, which is called in a perverted way public space. It's not public, because if it's public, I have the right to use it in my way.
Thanks so much for this conversation.
Okay. I hope it was not, I didn't kill you.
It was great.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Whatever you do with it, maybe you can.